My name is David Greenberg, and I'd like to welcome everyone to our teleseminar today entitled How to Make Selfish Use of Media Interviews. My expert guest is Eric Seidel, nationally known media training coach. Eric works with major national and international corporations and their executives. With more than 25 years in both radio and television news, both on the air and in management, Eric brings his extensive experience from the newsroom to the boardroom. You're in for a treat today. Please welcome Eric Seidel. Welcome, Eric.
David, a pleasure to be with you. Thank you very much.
I'm so glad that you're here. We are calling from Atlanta, Georgia, where we do not have snow today, but many other areas of the United States are blanketed. It looks pretty from a distance. So, Eric, we are thrilled that you are our guest today, and we're going to learn a lot about handling media to our advantage. And before we get into the nitty-gritty questions, I'm curious just how you got involved in this. Could you give us a little bit more about your background and what got you started in working in media?
Well, I got into radio when I was in high school and got the bug. And as my career took hold, I went to journalism school at the University of Missouri, came out, and as my career took hold, you know, I met a lot of people in public relations, of course, as I was in news. And the friends I made there started asking me to participate in their media training workshops. And that was really an eye-opener to me because I thought, geez, I can really help people understand how to deal with the news media and also understand what drives us on the news side of things, why we do things the way we do, how we edit the stories that we work on, and everything, so they understand. And I've taken that today, David, to the boardroom, as you said in your introduction. I'm not interested in teaching evasion or even ignoring questions, but there are ways of answering questions on your terms, from your perspective, and still be responsive to the questions you're being asked.
Well, thank you. Who should know how to do this? Who's the appropriate audience to know how to handle the media?
Well, I think any CEO, but you know what? It's everybody in a position to create an impression or a perception of a company or an organization needs to know how to handle themselves, because with the internet today, everyone's media, David, potentially, everyone. We can all create a website or a blog and go online and start reporting, in quotes, what we feel, what we think, and also our feelings about others and organizations. So it's the Wild West today, and there's no sheriff in town. So everybody needs to know who is going to be in a position of creating impressions or perceptions about your company and about yourselves. You need to know how to do that in an effective and very clear-headed way.
Very good. Yeah, and so it could really be anybody who has an ability to impact the company or their business in the public light.
And that includes the receptionist, because that's your front line, you know, when they're talking to the public. You know, they need to know the techniques and just how, even especially handling what may be argumentative calls or just somebody who is, you know, creating some emotion. Because you need to know how to control your emotions and handle those things in a very professional and effective way.
Very good. So, Eric, what should someone consider before agreeing to an interview, if there is even a chance to say yes or no?
Well, your question brings me right to the title of the of this interview with you, is in how to make selfish use of news interviews. When a reporter comes to you, approaches you to do an interview, whether it's on the phone or in person, David, they're not there to do you a favor. They're there to accomplish a goal. They want to get a story. So I believe that there's reciprocity involved here. If they're there to get something from you, you need to go into that interview predetermined what you want to get out of the interview. And that's why it's selfish. But there's nothing wrong with that. You know, what is the goal you need? Are there who are the audiences you need to reach? What is the message you need to get out to those audiences? And are those messages going to help you reach your business goals over the long term.
Okay. And do we always get the chance to say yes or no, or sometimes is it what we see on television where the microphone is just stuck in our face?
Well, that's the ambush, and there are times when that might happen to you. It could be much more subtle than that, too. A reporter may come up to you with a notepad and maybe not even introduce themselves, or if they do, they don't say, you know, they don't ask ahead of time or make it very clear, I'd like to interview you. So you have to be ready for that, and the first thing you do, if you're not aware of an interview having been arranged, or if you know emphatically no interview has been arranged, ask them who they are, who they represent, what they want to talk about. What I'm saying here is pre-interview them, and if you're not the right person to talk to about the issue they want to discuss, that is something you need to tell them. And if you feel you need more time to prepare, you have every right to say that. You know, look, I'll be happy to talk to you. I really need to do some boning up here. Or there may be a procedure or a process at your company that a reporter needs to go through to get to the person they want to talk to. All of those things are tools you can use in order to make sure that you are not in any way compromised.
Is it the same thing for print media as it is for recordings, audio and video?
It is the same thing in preparing. The preparations that I use, and as you pointed out in your introduction, my background is primarily broadcast news, radio,
right,
and TV. But the vast majority of the executives I prepare are probably going to do mostly print interviews. Mm-hmm. And today, it's a convergence today. You may be talking to a reporter who goes online and they have to provide, copy, video,
right,
and audio. But so the techniques that I teach are effective for all types of interviews.
Okay. And I've got a question for you about print media, and that is that I've been interviewed, and I'm grateful for it. It's always been a positive experience for me. But the responses that they say I said are usually not what I said. The interviewers seem to use a lot of poetic license, and though they're still trying to frame it in a positive light, I wish they had not written what they did, because it's not something I would have said. Do we have any control over that?
Well, first of all, a lot of people have shared that experience with you. That quote's not exactly what I said, or and they do take poetic license. My experience over the last few years is that print reporters allow themselves to capture what they think is the essence of what,
mm-hmm,
you've said, especially,
mm-hmm,
those who don't carry a tape recorder and don't really, you know, get the quote exactly right.
Right.
And then put quotation marks around,
exactly,
what they think is the essence. And I don't think that's a good practice. It is more prevalent today because of it's so competitive. One thing you can do is go back to the reporter and say, you know, I really didn't, and do it in a courteous way.
Sure.
Without getting getting into an argument with them, and go and tell them, you know, I don't think that's exactly what I said, but in the interview with a print reporter, speak more slowly, and underline, headline certain messages, and tell them before delivering a message that you'd really like to be quoted on and you think is very important, especially to you. And this is very, very important. This one, you need to hear this, okay? Then you've said to them, raise your antennae. This is one you want to capture. And
right,
then say it slowly. And if you
right,
need to, repeat it.
Yeah. Very good. Well, I will keep that in mind for the next interview. Let's talk about other things to keep in mind for our interviews, including let's start with best preparation strategies. How do we prepare for these so we're not caught off guard and we do use these in the selfish manner, as you say?
Well, the first thing to do is find out what the interview is about. And again, pre-interview the interviewer. And there may be somebody in your organization who does this for you.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure they do it effectively and get as much information as you can. Let me give this one caveat, because this is something that was really a problem for me, and it is for a lot of reporters. Do not request the questions in advance. That usually doesn't work very well. Now, I understand in trade media that does work. often, okay? And that's fine. If you know ahead of time that they're going to give you the questions in advance, because trade media, they just need product to put into their publications or online.
Right.
That's fine. But with a regular, what we would call a routine news reporter, asking for the questions ahead of time is a signal that you want editorial control over the story. And they'll take issue with that. And it could create some negative feeling. So there's no reason to do that. You can get what you want by pre-interviewing. You know, what do you want to talk about? Who else have you spoken to? What background do you have? Is there any background I can get you? Are you familiar with, you know, maybe issues that you're going to raise? Things like that. And really become their ally in a way by trying to help them become much more knowledgeable about the subject they want to talk to you about.
Once so you can, let me interrupt
sure.
for just a moment, because I think you're making great points. So you really do have the opportunity to interview the interviewer before the interview begins.
You should definitely make that opportunity available to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you know, if you do it in the right way and give this sense of being an ally, that you want to help them, because in the final analysis, reporters take the path of least resistance. And what if you built relationships where they keep coming back to you as their source of good, solid information, not as a mole, but as good information, and they start quoting you on a regular basis? You know what they're doing for you? They are positioning you as a leader in your subject area, in your organization, in your industry. And by doing that, you rise above the competition.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, what's the next step for
preparation? Okay, well, the next step is who does this media outlet reach, whether it's a print or broadcast? Who are their audiences? Look at the full reservoir, I think, and break them down. Who in there would be my customers and my prospects? Who would be my internal audiences? And that's employees. It could be sister offices around the country, in other parts of the city, wherever. Who are my stakeholders? And take that literally. Do I have if I'm a public company, who are my stockholders? Who are the analysts on Wall Street?
Right.
Employee families are stakeholders. The heads of unions, if you deal with union employees, people like that. You may have vendors who you consider stakeholders. And then who in my industry do I need to consider as an audience target? Even competitors, when you both are dealing with the same issues or challenges and you need to be singing from the same song sheet, who are those? And then what unique audiences might you have if you're in a regulated industry, OSHA, things like that? Who are those audiences? If you're a utility, a public utility commission or public service commission, are those audiences? The legislature, the governor, your congressional delegation, are those audiences that you can legitimately reach that are important to you for the story that's being done? You really need to identify those audiences, and you need to do that because once you know who you want to reach out to, then you can start defining what you want to say to them. If you don't know, if you look at a TV audience and say, everybody, you're not talking to anyone effectively or efficiently. It's not everybody. There are certain audiences out there that you can help persuade. You can change the way they think, especially if they're on the fence. You can validate and reinforce your allies. And you also can repeat messages externally to your employees that they have heard internally. That's very validating to them.
Very good, very good. Yeah, it's much like preparing for a speech, as I teach. Know your audience.
Yeah,
you got to
start there.
With the knowledge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. What else should we do for preparation?
Well, then once you've done that, what is the overall impression, David, you want to leave with those audience targets? And this is, keep in mind, this when I say impression, it's an intangible. I like to tell people that I work with in my seminars that people often forget what you say or what you did, but they do remember how you made them feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, David, you ever walked into a room and you see somebody there that you know you've met before, but it's out of context this second
sure.
time.
All
and
the time.
You say, geez, I can't remember where I met them, but I remember how I feel about them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And that's really the goal you want to make. It's right. Not one interview, unless you really make a negative impression, one interview, one story won't necessarily do it. But if you're doing this on a cumulative basis and you're consistent in the stories that you interview for, after a while, it's sort of like marketing. It's like advertising. You know, after a while, that message gets heard and it resonates and it makes an impression that sticks.
Right. And so how can we, when we know the overall impression that we want to give to the viewers or readers, how do we make that impression? Or are we going to get to that later? I don't want to
Well,
get off the gun
well, you say it. It's one of your messages. It is the overriding message. If I said, here's my overriding message to you today, David,
mm-hmm.
that you need to know the ROI of doing an interview. What's the return on the interview for you? That's part of being selfish, okay? What
right.
are you going to get out of this, or what do you want to get out of that? Out of that interview, out of that story, okay, and then you start defining, okay, what are the things that will help me reinforce that impression? What are the things that the supporting messages, in effect, that I can use? And don't overpopulate your planning with too many messages, because you'll lose focus, and you'll also the reporter might lose focus.
Yeah.
So 3 to 5 supporting messages, and repeat these things in different ways as you're doing the interview. By the way, the reporter is not your audience.
Right.
Most people, I think, inherently understand that, but once you're in front of a reporter, you start to focus on that person, and that the reporter is just the power line that conducts the messaging to the audiences you want to reach.
Good point. Okay, so know your overall impression and your core message, if you will, and then
yes.
3 to 5 supporting messages.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. As far as retention of ideas, do you think it's changed in recent years from the way people, when we're watching the media, we're watching the news, watching an interview, have our attention spans changed?
Well, I think we are deluged with
yeah.
so many sources of information going back to the internet. You turn on TV, if you have cable or satellite, there are hundreds of channels available to you. There's messages hitting you constantly if you're online. So the short answer to your question is yes, our attention
yeah.
span is being attacked on a daily
yeah.
basis. So
yeah.
that's why it really requires even more focus in preparation for an interview and being very, very targeted on what you want to accomplish and what you want to say.
Yeah, very good. So what's our next preparation step?
Well, rehearse. Okay, and first of all, don't write a script. When you're doing these, I use a template, that a very exclusive proprietary template that I turn over to my clients
right.
when we're done. I use 2 templates that are designed to really get them focused. And one thing I try to really emphasize with them, don't write a script. Scripts become confining, and they can steal your personality. Because you've just memorized. What you want to do is to get somebody in your organization, maybe 1 or 2 people, go through the preparation process, and then once you know your agenda, have them put you through a rehearsal, maybe more than once,
mm-hmm.
and tell them, no softballs, hit me with curveballs and hardballs here.
Right.
You need to be ready. I see, and I'll tell you somebody who is excellent at this. I'm convinced, I don't know, have any inside information, but I'm convinced that he does that type of preparation. That's Bill Gates. When he was running Microsoft, and he was not great when he started, but boy, he got real good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Very
mm-hmm.
good at it.
Yeah. Well, I he probably had some coaching, wouldn't you think?
Well, I think he had coaching, and I think he did some very, very effective preparation prior to doing any interviews. I saw him on Nightline twice, and when Ted Koppel was still the host of that show on ABC News here in the United States, and he tied Koppel into a pretzel both times, and he did it on his terms. He was still, he was answering Koppel's question, but he wasn't going to go where Koppel wanted to take him because he knew it would be counterproductive to the audiences he had to reach out to.
Well, that leads me to a question I'm going to hold off on in a moment. But so we've got five steps so far, as I see it, know what the interview is about, which sounds so basic, but it's certainly essential. Know who your target audience is. Know who else this interviewer has interviewed. Know your overall impression and rehearse. Anything else for preparation?
Well, a lot of this comes into the rehearsal part of it, body language, and David, with your skills and your expertise in doing preparation and speech training, you know how important body language is. It is more than 90% of what you communicate. And some people ask me, well, what if I'm doing a telephone interview? And I said, I tell them, your body language comes through in the tone of your voice. If the passion is not there, and that can be heard. And that has subtle impact on the person interviewing you. Body language is very, very important. And so when you rehearse, do it with a camera.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What are some do's and don'ts for body language? What are some of the good things and bad things, if you will?
Well, if you're in front of the reporter, lean into them, okay? Now, don't get in their face, but lean into them. If you are expressive with your hands, use that. Don't overuse it, but use that. If you feel passionate about something, let the passion come through. I'm going to give you another example. Jack Welch. I spent a day with him when I was hosting a business newscast each week here in Atlanta. And I met him personally. Now, he's an incredibly charming man. When you meet him one-on-one, it's a magnetic feeling. He doesn't speak well. He has that very, very thick Boston area accent. He grew up in Salem, Massachusetts.
Okay.
He stammers and stutters. He was a mama's boy. Admittedly, he wrote about this in his first book. He's not a perfect orator by any stretch, okay?
Right.
But when he's talking to you, the passion is so visible, and the commitment to what he's saying and the belief in what he's saying is so self-assured that any speech impediments, any accent, those are obliterated. You're getting the message anyway because he is so sincere about what he's saying.
Yeah. Now, I just conducted a two-day workshop on presentation skills for executives, and, of course, they all want to know, do I have my hands in the right place? Am I standing in the right place? And all the little things, which are definitely important. However, I think you and I would agree, just as you were talking about Jack Welch, that if you are passionate, if you are prepared, if your content is good and valuable, people don't focus on these little things that we think are distractions. I believe they only focus on that stuff when they're bored.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
When you're really not getting them focused on something else, on the message.
Exactly. Yeah. What are some of the things with body language that you've seen that have worked against people?
Well, folded arms. And, you know, whether or not the message is, you know, I'm bored or you know, I'm holding back, that's the message that is heard. Smile. Now, if you're talking about something very, very serious, okay, the smile may be inappropriate. Otherwise, though, smile, be pleasant. And there are times when a question may feel like it's getting under your skin. And you have to make a conscious effort of going into an interview knowing that you don't want your emotions to go into the room with you. Look, they may be talking to you about your business. Let's say you're the CEO of a company, and you started this company. It's a part of your DNA.
Sure.
And you get questions that may feel like they're tweaking you, you're being attacked. You really need to predetermine that you will not let those questions draw you into a fight, that you can answer them in a positive way. And that's one thing I really emphasize. David, how many times have you heard somebody say when they're upset with a story, no matter what medium it's on or what media, that they took me out of context?
Oh, you hear it all
yeah,
the
okay.
time.
Yeah, okay. You know what? I think it's a lie most of the time. And even if it isn't, even if it is not, it has been used so much it has lost any impact.
That's just true.
Doesn't mean anything anymore. And it just sounds like an excuse, a very flimsy, weak excuse.
So, Eric, I've got a question based on what you just said and about separating, if you will, the emotional response and not getting triggered emotionally to questions that could easily trigger emotions. And I believe many of our listeners who may not even be interviewed by the media but just maybe having some questions shot at them by listeners from other audiences might fall into that trap. Is there something you can share with us that would help our listeners to put those emotions aside? It's not easy to do. Is there anything you can tell our listeners to do to help prepare for that?
Well, you're right. It can be difficult. And this comes, part of this is rehearsal. Before you rehearse, sit down and, you know, you've already made the points, the message points that you want to get across with that overall objective, that overall impression you want to communicate. But the other thing to consider is, what are the negative questions that I might get asked? And some, you know, a lot of these are going to come to you naturally. You know your organization. You know your issues better than the reporter. Mm-hmm. The reporter may cover your industry, may cover your business, may know a lot about it. But first of all, they wouldn't be talking to you if they had all the information already.
Right.
So, they need something from you. Coming back to what that's the selfish reasons for doing an interview. They need something. You need something. Okay. So, prepare by anticipating some of the negative questions and learning how to react to those in a positive way. And this, you have the right to pause before you answer. And when you pause, think about, okay, how can I answer this positively, which without getting drawn into a fight or a debate or feeling that I have to correct the reporter. Those things are weak. They dilute the impact of your messaging. It's much better when you come at something where it's very negative and say, well, you know, from my perspective, and bridge that way and go into a positive answer. That way you're not being provoked. And that way you also are getting a powerful message through to those target audiences.
Yeah. And it sounds like a lot of this comes down to that rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's critical. It is critical.
Yeah. And most people don't rehearse. Most people, if they do rehearse, they rehearse for what they're going to say before the questions, but they don't rehearse their answers to the questions.
Right.
Yeah.
And be fair and objective. You know, what are the negatives here? You know some things that are going on in your industry. If you're in the power industry, you know a lot of things. I mean, you can look everywhere and see where the negatives are, and you just need to anticipate those and be prepared.
Is there something you can do if you do get triggered emotionally and perhaps something does come out of your mouth or through your body language that you regret, that just was too much of an emotionally charged response? Can you fix it?
My feeling about that is honesty is always refreshing. And can solve a lot of problems. Let's say you do get provoked, and maybe even say, you know, wow, that's that question really hits at home. You know, this I started this company. It's a big part of me and my life, and you know, and I'm very protective of it. So you know, it might even say, good question, but boy, that hurts. But mm-hmm. Let me answer it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then go into a positive answer. So you know, it. David, when people admit mistakes,
yeah,
when they say that when they're just honesty can be so refreshing, and
absolutely,
people really reward you for that.
Yeah.
Another thing, David, let me say this because this is one point that I think is very, very important. I teach it. The people I teach understand it intellectually, but practicing it can be very, very difficult. An interview is not a conversation, and it has all the attributes. It's the proverbial duck. It quacks like an interview, like a conversation.
It
waddles like a conversation, but it is not. It is a message delivery environment. It can look like a conversation, and that's fine. But in the final analysis, you are getting messages across in a responsive way to the questions to the audiences you've targeted.
And to add to that, would that be that we can easily get lured into thinking it is a conversation?
Oh, yeah, especially at the start of the in the interview. You know, the interviewer may be very casual talking to you about your family and everything, and all of a sudden you're into the interview before you even realize it, but from a conversation mode. So you've got to – that's another part of the rehearsal. Make sure that, you know – and here's why. The strongest – answer to any question is something that is positive and self-contained. If you're in conversation, you will end up answering questions by picking up on the question and saying, well, because, and so now you don't have a self-contained answer.
I see.
Okay? Or you may answer, well, no, that's not true, something like that. Those are not good responses. What you want to do is really keep reminding yourself, I'm here to communicate messages to my target audiences. I will answer the questions responsibly, but I'm going to do it on my terms because I need to get something out of this story as well.
Yeah. So your what comes out of your mouth needs to be a grammatically correct, but a complete thought.
Correct. Correct. Make it a complete, you know, give them a quote. You know, look, they deal in quotes.
Give them a quote.
I was a reporter for years in radio and TV. When I would go in, I would cover a news conference. It could last an hour, hour and a half, and I was given on radio maybe 45 seconds, and I had to use a piece of tape. Or in TV, a minute 15, a minute 30 to take that hour and a half and boil it down. So what was I doing? I was listening for quotes.
Yeah, exactly. You want the complete thought or the way you can't air it.
Reporters are listening for, you know, how can I get this down into the package with the bow on it that meets my limitations in print in the space I have or in broadcast the time I'm given.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent idea. We're talking with Eric Seidel, nationally known media training coach, and our topic today is how to make selfish use of media interviews. Eric, there is a wonderful example of a very bad interview on the old Bob Newhart show. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, I've played it for audiences. Yes.
Oh,
yeah. When he's on set of a morning show in Chicago. Yes.
Yeah.
Talking about psychology. And the way I set that up, I haven't been using it much in recent years because I found something even better that is an actual news interview.
Wow.
But Newhart, you know, this show was on in the 70s, I believe. And I think us guys, psychology was sort of voodoo then.
Right.
So here he was with a very, very opinionated interviewer saying, you know, all he did was solve hangnails.
and rips off people or overcharges.
Right, and at the time it was $40 an hour. I mean, I would love to find a psychologist. And it's very funny. And he gets sucked in and very defensive. And one of the great lines in there is she asks him, who are some of your patients? And he said, well, I'm not going to get into names, but I deal with athletes and corporate executives and a politician. And she stops and says, what? Oh, an elected official is what he said. He said, did you say an elected official? And he says, I don't remember. and she said, well, you know, there could be a man running around out there who is demented, and he's in public office. And Newhart says, well, he's not demented anymore. It is a very funny bit.
Yeah, so I would actually encourage our listeners to probably go to YouTube. You could probably find it if you just Google Bob Newhart show interviews, and it'd be a really good clip to watch
of what not to do.
What was interesting about that clip and its relevance is that the woman who's doing the interviewing prior to them going on air is the sweetest person you'd ever want to meet, and she seems like she's just going to be a pushover, but when the on-air light comes on, boy, the whole nature just changed.
Yeah.
He got ambushed.
Yeah, he did big time, and she even came to his office on the TV show to ask him to do the interview. So you're right. You're absolutely right. She did set him up.
So speaking of ambushes, I realize that doesn't happen most of the time, but if it does, any advice there, Eric?
You are ambushed again. You have the right to say, tell me who you are to the reporter. Who do you represent? What would you like to talk about? Who have you spoken to already? Have you spoken to anybody else? What type of information do you have? You know, is there anything I can prepare you with that I can, you know, that help background you on? Those type of things. And say, and again, if you have a process or a procedure. Maybe you're supposed, anybody who wants to interview you is supposed to go through your public relations vice president or your marketing or communications person, whoever has that title and that job function. You have every right to tell them, you know, look, here's what I want you to do. I may or may not be the right person for you to talk to, but call this person. I'll help get you in touch with them. Give them access. Help them get access. And then let them go through the proper procedure, because you've been instructed to use that procedure. And then they may come back to you. That gives you time to prepare. Now, if you're a small business owner and they want to talk to you and you were not prepared for them ahead of time, you have every right to say, let me, I'll be happy to talk to you, but I really need to prepare. I need to do some preparation of my own so that, I'm effectively using your time and mine.
Okay, good stuff. Now, I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Sure.
But if all that happens and you have a nice interview going, but something happens in the middle of it where you do feel like you're being ambushed, is there anything you can do in the middle of the interview?
Well, again, and now, you know, you haven't given yourself, the way you're the scenario you're setting up here, David, you haven't given yourself a lot of time to prepare yourself even psychologically, mentally for this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you feel that. You say, you know, look, I think I see where you're going with your questions, but, you know, I'd like you to look at it from my perspective, okay? Mm-hmm. Bring it back to your perspective. And they may ask you, well, you know, so-and-so said this, or there's research that says that. Those are third-party questions. If you're not familiar with that, you don't have to react to it. If somebody said something and you had not heard that before, and you have every right to, you know, I'm not familiar with that. I've not heard that. But let me tell you this. Bridge, mm-hmm. use the opportunity to go to a message anyway.
Okay.
You know, and body language comes into play here too, David, because you can actually look like you're back on your heels, and you want to try to avoid that.
Eric, there was a recent Larry King interview, and probably most of our listeners around the world know who Larry King is. He's on CNN, and he's been there for many, many years. And the guest, it was either a Miss America or a Miss USA contestant, and I apologize for not knowing which contest it was, but she walked off during the middle of the interview. She did not like his questions, and she actually walked off. And any thoughts on that, not specifically about her, but about the impact of that and how that could be handled better by our listeners?
Well, you know what? In the long run, I think that's going to reflect badly on you if you walk off and not on him. I remember when Lester Maddox, who was at the time former governor, maybe governor of the state of Georgia, and had been really labeled a segregationist at the time, walked off a Dick Cavett show. It reflected poorly on Maddox. And Cavett, you know, was certainly politically on the opposite end of the spectrum from Maddox and was probably being very tough on him. But if you walk, you are the weaker one. Mm-hmm. And I think what you've got to do is really steel yourself and say, you know, look, I clearly hear what opinions you have here, you know, or what you're, you know, I'm getting a sense of what your feelings are about that. And I'm really here to tell you how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
And just be as, I know it's hard. It's very easy for me to sit here and say
right.
that now, but it you really have got to make yourself the better person.
Excellent. Now, I think I heard you use the term bridge a couple times.
Yes, yeah.
Is that a term that you use or teach, bridge?
It is. And bridging is just, it could be using the word but or the word actually or a phrase. You know, from my perspective, this is the way I see it, okay? And then you go into, it's just little statements that bridge you from where the reporter wants to take you
mm-hmm.
to where you want to go.
Right.
Instead. So that's why it's called bridging.
And we see politicians, I believe, use this frequently in interviews where they don't seem to want to answer the question, but they do have an agenda.
With politicians, I'm afraid to say, David, often it's more just pure evasion. Where, you know, they just ignore the question and they go to an answer, a message that they had pre-prepared. And that becomes, here's why I don't like that. It's a distraction. It takes somebody watching the interview, somebody who may be very critical to you in terms of an audience, sees and hears that, and they're back on, oh, wow, they're not answering the question. So they're not even hearing what you're saying now. They're back where to where the question was. So you've only done yourself a disservice. I don't use politicians as examples of the video. I use a lot of video in my training, demonstrating techniques, and get people who are there interactively to really, you know, respond to this video. I don't use politicians for that very reason.
Very good. So we're not talking about the techniques that they use for, to be used by business people for the most part.
In most cases, no. There are exceptions. I want to be fair. There are exceptions. There are politicians who do answer the questions responsively, but on their terms.
And so are there other ways that we can control the content and the context so that we always look good?
Well, yeah, it does come down to, you know, I'm going to keep bringing you back to, you know, preparing and rehearsing.
That's fine. If that's the one message our listeners get, as a speech coach myself, I'd be tickled.
Yeah, well, you know, look, you go into the interview hopefully with that ROI, return on interview, in mind. What is it that I need to get out of this? Why? Otherwise, why are you there?
Right.
And what you want to do is, abridging becomes a way of doing it, maintaining context, always considering a question, even the most negative or provocative questions, as, okay, how can I answer this in a positive, self-contained way without being provoked here?
Mm-hmm. Can I throw an example out at you?
Sure.
Okay, so if somebody were to say, how do you get away with charging so much more than your competition? It just seems ridiculous. How do you sleep at night?
Well, I can't speak for my competition and how they value what they offer. I can only speak for what my services and how I value and how my clients in the past have valued what I offer, and that's how I base my fees.
You're good, Eric. Very good, and I know that. That's why you're here. And so what I also noticed is you didn't answer how you sleep at night because you really didn't need to.
Right. That's your issue. It's not mine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So excellent. And let's see. So we've gone over not letting the interviewer provoke you. How can we use interviews to build our business? If we're in a business building phase, can we seek out interviews?
I wholeheartedly endorse the idea of using the media as a way of promoting your business. Now, that is the word used there can be over-examined, over-defined, and use can become abuse. And I'm not promoting that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if you build relationships with the media and you become a source of expertise to them, and again, reporters are like every other human being on earth. They like to take the path of least resistance, maybe more so than most human beings. And if you are somebody who they know is accessible, is straight with them, has information that will help them do their job more efficiently and more quickly,
right,
they'll keep coming back to you. And when they keep coming back to you, inevitably, they may not use you in every story they do. They may just get the information they need to do the story. But they're going to use you a lot more than they use others. And over a period of time, you become their expert, and they invariably they're promoting you as an expert. It raises your the people's knowledge of you, especially your audiences, especially customers and prospects, and it raises you above your competitors.
Okay.
I believe wholeheartedly in being available to the news media. And you know what? if you're in crisis, you better be available to them, even more accessible than you are in routine situations.
Yeah, that's certainly a whole topic unto itself. And perhaps we'll come back to that in a moment. But if we want to seek out the media, how does one go about that?
Well, it depends on how your organization is structured. You may have, again, somebody who's handling the public relations communications for you, and that's one way. Now, again, this is not something to be abused. You have to have valid reasons for talking to the media, but creating those relationships without a predetermined goal that you're going, they have to come to you each time. That's not going to work. That's not an understanding you want to go for. What you want to do is just build those relationships, especially with beat reporters, but not limited to beat reporters. You may be in a smaller market where the reporters change constantly. It can be time consuming, but getting to know those folks can be very, very valuable to you. Just the relationships, they come to the person they're comfortable with. And if you have that relationship built, that can serve you so well over and over again.
Very good. And let's talk just a moment, if you will, about crisis management with the media. Any pointers there? We certainly have some examples going on real time in our media with some celebrity athletes.
Yeah. Well, you can use the Tiger Woods example. What we didn't know about Tiger, we thought there was one maybe occasion of infidelity, but it's a serial case here, so that it may not be the best example. But early on, my feeling was that if Tiger had confronted this immediately, he would have started to really take some of the heat off the story. Let me use another example. Same case.
Right.
David Letterman.
Yes.
Goes on the air. He announces the news that he's had affairs with people he works with. He announced it. How long did that story last? Maybe a week?
Yeah.
Maybe less. And, of course, he was the target of other talk show hosts and people who were, deriding him and making fun of him. But that story went away. We've all pretty much forgotten about it.
Yeah.
Tiger's reluctance to talk and the advice, I can only assume he's gotten bad advice, maybe good too, but he took the bad advice, has been like putting logs on the fire.
Mm-hmm.
It just keeps burning bright.
So what could we take away from that if we are facing a crisis in our organization or personally, and it is something the media wants to discuss? What pointers might you share with us?
First thing you have to understand, with the internet and everything, the media are all pervasive. So it's the chance of it showing up somewhere are very, very good. You need to participate in the story. You need to be part of the story in order to control some of the information. Now, you're not going to have total control. The media go to outside sources all the time. Let me use an extreme case. Maybe there is God forbid, a plane crash, okay? Who do the media, especially the all-news cable channels, they gravitate to third parties, experts, and everything. You've got to be there and position yourself as the source of the best, most accurate information available, because there's a lot of speculation and rumor going on. And when you're not participating, there is a news vacuum developing, and it's the law of physics comes into play. It demands being filled, and it will be filled with rumors, speculation, and eyewitnesses who may or may have not seen things accurately. You've got to be there positioning yourself as the best source of accurate information.
Good point. Eric, I've got perhaps just one more question or one little topic here, and I say little intentionally, that it seems like in recent times, and what I mean perhaps the last couple of years, is that we're more used to hearing sound bites and seeing sound bites as Twitter and tweeting, I'm obviously showing my age here, has become even more popular, and people are only allowed a certain number of words to get across in a tweet. that our audiences have been conditioned to hear very little at one time. Is that impacting communication in media and interviews, and what should we know about that?
Well, I think it's probably a result of the way the media have been using sound bites and interviews. It's certainly appropriate considering the amount of time we have to spend on Twitter and other places while we're going through a normal day. So I don't think it's a cause so much as an effect, David, of the media. And it may be a good place for you to participate to get used to answering things in a very concise way.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter could be a great place to rehearse in some ways.
That's a great idea. It's a great idea for practicing your conciseness. I love it. Good idea. Well, we have been talking with Eric Seidel on how to make selfish use of media interviews. Again, Eric is a nationally known media training coach, and he works with major national and international corporations and their executives. And he's been doing this for more than 25 years. Well, more than 25. I don't mean to emphasize your age, but I do mean to emphasize your experience, and it is vast. So, Eric, any parting thoughts for our audience today on handling these media interviews?
Well, I have a website, and it's themediatrainers.com, themediatrainers.com. And you will see in the middle of my homepage a lot of stories under the heading of headlines. And that will take you – I do blog updates on – and it evaluates executives and how they handle the news, news interviews. It may be of some value to you. Feel free to go on there, and then when you get into the blog, just subscribe. I don't flood you with a lot of emails. I only put things up there when I feel they're pertinent.
Right.
And you might find them. I know my clients and my prospects, I get great feedback on that. It's good for them to get tips. So it's themediatrainers.com, and you'll see the stories on my homepage. And again, if some points, David, for everybody to remember, it's worthwhile dealing with the news media, as scary as it may seem. Develop relationships. Always go into a news media encounter with a preconceived notion of what you want to get out of that. What's in it for you? A selfishness. It's fine. The reporter is being selfish,
mm-hmm.
too. And prepare. Make sure you isolate on your audiences. You know exactly who you want to reach out to, the overall impression you want to make with them, the messages that will reinforce and validate that impression. Rehearse on camera if at all possible so you can see your body language. And even if it's going to be a telephone interview, body language. I'm sitting here. I'm waving my arms while I'm talking to you right now.
and I'm standing. I stand during my phone interviews like that.
Right. I do that a lot, too.
Yeah.
I do that a lot, too. And really prepare yourself, and then make sure you're focused, and make sure you anticipate negative questions so that you're not provoked into getting into a contentious situation.
Excellent. Well, Eric, thank you so much for being our guest and sharing your time and your wisdom with our listeners today. I appreciate your being here.
Thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for your being here. And I want to thank our listeners for also being here. And I will keep you posted about our future teleseminars, where we will cover even more great ideas from leading experts like Eric Seidel. If we can be of additional service to you, this is David Greenberg, and you can just visit davidgreenberg.com, and we will be glad to help you. So until we meet again, David Greenberg wishing you all great success. Bye-bye, everyone.